Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Sasha Pfeiffer, and this is On Point. The U.S. Senate returns today, the House next week, and a busy schedule awaits. Big ticket items face Congress this year: funding the government, immigration reform, fixing crumbling roads, welfare overhaul. Republicans control both chambers plus the White House. Their biggest victory last year, tax reform, didn't come until the final days of 2017, and that had huge Democratic opposition. Now Mitch McConnell says he wants more bipartisanship. This hour on Point, the most pressing issues on the congressional docket and the likelihood that Congress will get anything done. And joining us this hour from Washington is Susan Davis, a congressional correspondent for NPR. Susan, welcome back to On Point.
Hey there.
Also with us from Washington is Sunmin Kim, who covers Congress for Politico. Sunmin, welcome back to On Point to you also.
Hey, Sasha. Thanks for having me.
And with us from New York, where he is on a reporting trip, is Nash Jenkins. He's a Washington correspondent for Time magazine, where he covers Congress. And Nash, welcome to On Point to you as well.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sasha.
And Susan, Sunmin, and Nash, before we have the three of you weigh in, I want to hear a little bit about what we're hearing from the people who run Washington about what they consider priorities for this coming term. So here is from yesterday's daily briefing, the White House press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders. She said welfare reform, infrastructure, immigration reform, and health care will all be top priorities for the administration this year. But she said the most pressing need right now is the budget.
The president wants a two-year budget deal that provides realistic budget caps and provides certainty for our national security. That's our biggest and number one priority, and that'll be the focus front and center of the conversations that are taking place this week.
So again, that's the White House. Now we have Michigan Democratic Representative Debbie Dingell outline her legislative priorities for the upcoming year during a Sunday appearance on CBS's Face the Nation.
We clearly have to get a budget passed in January and make it long term. But there are so many other subjects. We've got to worry about pensions, health care. I've been living in a hospital for the last 2 weeks with my husband. I cannot tell you how many people come to my room crying and scared to death. And we have to do DACA.
That reference to her husband, by the way, is former Michigan Congressman John Dingell, who was hospitalized after a fall in December. Susan Davis of NPR, can you start us off very broadly by telling us what you consider Congress is coming back to? Republicans just had this big tax reform victory. On the other hand, Doug Jones, new Democrat, starts the Senate his Senate job today. What is the landscape right now?
Sure. I would say, one, just in terms of the climate, in terms of the mood, I think Republicans are coming back to Washington feeling pretty good. They had their most significant legislative victory, passing the $1.5 trillion tax cut right before the holidays. And in a year of 2017, where the relationships between the White House and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and House Speaker Paul Ryan were often at odds or very tense, they're probably in the best place they've ever been at this point in time. What they do with that remains to be seen. In the short term, the two big questions Congress is facing in January is, can they make any progress on immigration legislation? And they have a very long list of budgetary to-do items that includes, in the short term, figuring out a way to keep the government open and deciding how much money the government should be spending in the fiscal year.
Currently, there's a short-term stopgap spending bill that keeps the government open through January 19. Is that the deadline they're facing?
That is the short-term deadline. They'll either need to come up with a longer-term solution. They will likely need another short-term stopgap funding bill. In the meantime, congressional leaders are meeting today with senior White House officials to try and come up with a top-line number for the federal budget to agree what they should be spending for the year for both defense and everything else that the federal government has to spend its money on. They should have been able to do that under normal budgetary times. Those decisions should have been made by the end of September. Congress is well-known for not meeting those kind of deadlines, and it's been operating on these short-term stopgap stopgap funding measure since then. They're hoping to wrap that up and move on. As part of that, these negotiations, too, it will also be interesting to watch on health care. If you recall, during the tax debate, there were big promises made to Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins in exchange for her vote in support of the tax bill that she was given certain level of assurances from the majority leader that they would pass two health care related measures to prop up the individual market under the Affordable Care Act. The House refused to do that before they left for the break. And that is one thing we're also going to be watching this month, is whether or not Susan Collins gets what she asked for.
Sunmin Kim of Politico, we just heard Susan Davis say the Republicans come back feeling pretty good because of their tax reform win. On the other hand, there are many Americans still trying to decide how they feel about that tax reform bill, whether it's good for them in the long run. What's your view of how confident Republicans should be feeling, especially because their Senate majority just got a little slimmer?
They should be worried and watching the poll numbers. We saw repeatedly during the tax reform debate that the provisions of this legislation that Republicans passed into law last month are not popular. It does not poll well with the public. This is why Democrats feel emboldened that this tax package is something that they can run on, they can bludgeon Republicans with at the polls this November. We have asked Republican leaders repeatedly about this issue, about how this legislation does not seem to be popular with the public. I remember when I sat down with Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, when the Senate was passing its tax legislation, and he believes that once the public starts seeing the benefits of this tax overhaul bill, whether it's bigger paychecks or more booming economy, you've heard Republicans like promote a lot of these stories about how companies are giving bonuses and crediting the tax overhaul law for those bonuses to their employees. Once they see the benefits of the law, Republicans are confident that it will become more popular. But that was the same gamble that Democrats took with the Affordable Care Act almost 8 years ago. And we saw politically how that played out for them in the midterm elections in 2010.
And Nash Jenkins of Time Magazine, we've heard many Republicans say, sure, we didn't get along with Democrats last year, we couldn't agree on much, but 2018 will be different. It's time for bipartisanship. Nash, you had a piece recently, and the headline says it all. The headline was, "The Republican Tax Bill Proves That Bipartisanship Is Dead." What do you think the prospects are for seeing more harmony this year?
Yeah, I think the idea that 2018 is going to be a year of bipartisan harmony is baloney, frankly. Already, I know that there have been talks about an infrastructure package that President Trump has been gunning for. Those talks involve Republicans and no Democrats. I think the Republicans in Congress have made it clear that this is their court and their desire to work across the aisle is negligible. We saw that with the tax reform package, which was a sweeping piece of legislation that was effectively crafted behind closed doors, minimal public hearings, minimal insight from Democrats, sort of fast-tracked through Congress, passed before Christmas. As a result, I think the Democratic talking points for the 2018 midterms are effectively writing themselves. As Sung Min was saying, the tax bill is really, really unpopular. And I think what Mitch McConnell, et cetera, I think what they've said about, wait till the tax bill, wait till tax returns come back and, people are going to see that they're making more money. I think that's quantifiably false. In the coming months, Democrats are going to be able to say, hey, look at what this Republican-led Congress has done for you, the American voter. Effectively nothing. I think they're sort of just biding their time. They've accepted that, the Republicans don't really want to work with them, but it's going to serve them when voters go to the polls in November.
A really big and sensitive issue on the docket is entitlement spending, big budget items like Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare. We've had a few listeners weigh in on Facebook, and here's a sampling of the theme we're getting. A listener named Sharon Yu writes, "I am sick to death of hearing something that I have paid into for 45 years called an entitlement." Kevin Martin writes, "Entitlements, as in you paid for it, you're entitled to it, right?" Here's Susan Fabian. "It's not an entitlement when you spend your entire working life paying for it." Susan Davis of NPR, how sensitive is the issue of possibly cutting entitlements like Social Security, like Medicare?
House Speaker Paul Ryan has certainly opened the door to trying to do something along those lines this year. Specifically, he'd like to use those same budget process that Republicans used to try and repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, the same budget process they successfully used to pass their tax cut bill. This time around, he'd like to use it for what he's calling welfare reform, specifically programs that are geared towards lower-income families and needy Americans. And I don't think it's an understatement to say that that's a very controversial thing for him to try to do in an election year. And it's why I think people like Mitch McConnell have put the brakes on that and has very publicly said that he does not share the interest of the speaker in going down that road in 2018. I think one of the lessons we did learn from 2017 is that the public tends to like these programs, that they're popular, that they help people. They are expensive. They cost a lot of money. It is a budgetary question that the American government is going to have to grapple with at some point. But I consider myself one of those people that's skeptical that trying to do some major legislative action that would reduce spending for these programs in 2018 in an election year, in a year when a lot of the fundamentals are working against the Republican Party, is something that they're going to find enough support within the own party to do, because I do not think that they will find any support across the aisle among Democrats to that end.
Susan, I'm glad you mentioned Paul Ryan in his remarks, because we have an excerpt from him talking about that. This is him discussing his plans for the welfare system, and this is last month on CBS This Morning. Paul Ryan.
We right now are trapping people in poverty, and it's basically trapping people on welfare programs, which prevents them from getting to hit their potential and getting in the workforce. The problem we're going to have with a faster growing economy, it's a good problem, is we're going to need more people working. And so we need to work on our welfare program so that we can ease the pathway and reduce the barrier from getting people from welfare to work. That's very significant entitlement reform as well. And so that's something we're going to tackle next year.
Sunmin Kim, does he have a right to sound so optimistic?
I don't know why he's being so optimistic, considering you look at the politics of the issue, plus the resistance from the Senate. Obviously, the Senate is going to have to go along with Paul Ryan's plan. And as Susan mentioned, Mitch McConnell, who is facing a very potentially contentious midterm election, where and now a narrower majority in the Senate, he has absolutely no interest in going down this path. Now, the Speaker, the majority
Sunmin,
leader.
Hold that thought, because we have to go to a brief break. But I will come back to you. Susan, Sunmin, Nash, stay with us. We're discussing the 2018 congressional docket and what to expect as the House and Senate reconvene this year. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer, and this is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, host of How I Built This, with the recommendation for another podcast for you to check out, namely How I Built This. Every week, I talk to the people behind some of the most inspiring companies and brands in the world, with stories of incredible persistence, grit, and insight. You can find How I Built This on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer, and we're looking ahead to the 2018 congressional term. The Senate returns today. The House is back in session on Monday. I'm talking with Susan Davis, congressional correspondent for NPR, Nash Jenkins, Washington correspondent for Time Magazine, who covers Congress, and Sunmin Kim, who covers Congress for Politico. Sunmin, can you pick up where you left off after the break? You were saying that you think Paul Ryan shouldn't quite sound as rosy as he does about his optimistic plans to reform welfare.
Exactly. And that's just because not just resistance from Mitch McConnell, but I talked to a lot of rank and file Senate Republicans before the break about what they think of the speaker's plans. And it's interesting how quickly they pivoted to other topics such as infrastructure, which tends to be a bit more of a bipartisan issue. Now, we'll see the Republicans both on Capitol Hill and in the White House lay out their agenda more in detail later this month. The speaker, the majority leader, and the president, as well as other top Republicans, are meeting at Camp David to start hammering out that 2018 legislative agenda. We also know that congressional Republicans have their annual retreat later this month. Clearly, the state of the Union, where the president will lay out his own agenda for the year. But the signs, they are not singing from the same. They are not singing the same tune right now. So that's going to be a major struggle for the speaker.
The Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has addressed how sensitive, how tricky entitlement reform can be after years of inaction on it. Here he is speaking a year-end news conference last month.
I've been here a while, and the only time we've been able to do that has been on a bipartisan basis. And it was a long time ago. It was Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill raising the age for Social Security, and that was before I got here, so it's been a while. The sensitivity of entitlements is such that you almost have to have a bipartisan agreement in order to achieve a result.
Sun Min and Susan and Nash, we have a number of callers who want to weigh in. Let's hear what some of them have to say. This is Mike calling from Framingham, Massachusetts. Mike, welcome to On Point. Tell us what you want and what you think you and expect from the congressional term coming up.
Hi, Sasha. Listen, this is where it all starts. The corporations, the wealthy, hide their money overseas. They don't provide jobs for people in this country. Then they turn around, they line their pockets with all the money they're saving. Then they get the tax breaks from the politicians they bought, meaning the Republicans. When they were doing the best, the working poor, the poor, the middle class, all get squeezed in. My health care has gone up $200 simply because the president, this was before their tax cuts kicked in and they eliminated the mandate. My health care went up $200 because of the president's, just his language. Now that they've taken away the mandate, taken more money out of the health care system, any tax break I may get or somebody could get will be eaten up by paying more for your health care. And to go after entitlements when you just add money to coffers that were already bulging of the rich is just inhumane. This is your typical Republican bought and paid for by the wealthy at the expense of everybody, the working poor, the poor, and the middle class.
Mike, thank you for that. And I am going to have our guests weigh in, but let's hear from one other caller before we hear from our guest. And this is Mark calling from New Orleans in Louisiana. Mark, welcome to On Point. Your thoughts on all this.
Thank you. Hi, Sasha. The angle I'd like to give is from that of retired people. I paid into Social Security for 45 years. I'm retired, and the Social Security is the bedrock of my wife and myself's financial planning for our retirement. Of course, we have other investments, but to see Social Security cut seriously would undermine the financial plan we had for our retirement. If you want to know how to partially pay for this, I agree with what the previous caller said. But one thing you could do is to basically eliminate the salary cap for Social Security contributions so that wealthier people who have good salaries pay the entire 12 months for Social Security instead of having the salary cap. That's my comment.
Mark, thanks for that suggestion. Nash Jenkins, can you tell us what you think about all that?
Yeah, totally. If we're being honest, I think the notion that entitlements are something to be whittled away speaks to how out of touch establishment Republicans are with, you know, the American electorate. And one could even go so far as to say that sort of fermented the frustration that carried President Trump to office last November. It's baffling to me that. You know, the conservative Republicans in the House think that it's a prudent political move to take away some of the most popular programs in the United States. As the two callers just said, you know, they're American voters who are suffering as a result of this. And, you know, I think, you know, in the end, President Trump is going to do some soul searching and really figure out whether he's beholden to the party or beholden to his base. Because the frustration I think we're going to see from his base if that, you know, we do away with Social Security funding, Medicare, which are, you know, popular programs, you know, regardless of partisan stance, you know, I think it could deflate the cult of personality a bit. And again, as I said earlier, it's sort of giving the Democrats everything they want in terms of messaging for the upcoming elections, which I think are already stacked in their favor. Just looking at political history, the president. His party tends to lose seats in the first midterm after his election, and B, these are volatile times, and the Democrats are building a lot of momentum, and I think things are going to work in their favor.
Let's hear from another caller. This is Peter from Waterbury, Connecticut. Peter, welcome to On Point, and your thoughts on what Congress faces and what you want to see it get done.
Hi, Sasha. Yeah, I don't know how we could talk about the budget without talking about welfare reform, means-tested benefits, so not including Social Security, not including Medicare, end up making up the largest part of the budget, and they just grow every single year. How could we ever get spending under control without addressing it in some way?
Peter, thank you for that. Susan Davis, could you weigh in on that? I'm particularly interested in how you would contrast what we just heard from Peter with our first caller, Mike, who expressed what you might say is that cynical view where some Democrats say, look, the reason Speaker Paul Ryan wants to cut these programs that help the neediest Americans is that you somehow have to mitigate the effects of a tax bill that permanently cuts enormous numbers of taxes for corporations. So how do you reconcile those two listener views?
Well, I would say broadly that these programs from Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, TAMP, the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, unemployment insurance, these are a part of the social fabric of this country. They benefit people of all races, genders, religions, and yes, political ideologies. So I think that that's part of the complexity of trying to resolve something that every single American life will be affected by one of these programs at some point in your lifetime, right? And so that is why I think people who are trying to find long-term meaningful solutions to the very real budgetary questions they present, particularly as we see the escalating retirement rates of baby boomers and the greater demands on the system, particularly in healthcare, that if you're going to find a way to keep the programs protected and solvent, this isn't a one-party solution. And that to Mitch McConnell's point, and although I would obviously caveat that a lot of his concern about moving forward on any kind of legislation on this effect has weighted with huge political concerns, but from a policy standpoint, the only way to do it, I think many people argue, is that you need to have some kind of bipartisan buy-in because you need a solution that you can convince the American people is good for them. And when one party tries to remake these programs, the backlash is profound and it is angry and people don't like it. I think we saw a glimpse of that last year when Republicans, just on their own accord, were trying to dismantle the Affordable Care Act. And within that, they were trying to entirely remake the Medicaid program and change it from a guaranteed benefit to capping the funding in the system. And there was a huge uproar about that system because it's not just about lower income Americans. It also affects senior citizens. It also affects children and people with disabilities. So there is no simple policy solution to these problems. It's very complex. And I think that is why this is one of these issues that has dogged Washington the entire time I've covered it. And there is no simple or expediting solution in the short term. And this is why I'm very skeptical that 2018 is a year where they make any progress towards shoring up these programs or giving any kind of certainty to the American people that they will be there for future retirees.
Listeners, we are at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're talking about this schedule, the busy docket that Congress has ahead this term, immigration, social welfare reform, trying to improve our crumbling roads and bridges. Let us know what you want Congress to do, what you want Congress to keep its hands off, what you want to see your tax money spent on and not spent on. Let's go to another caller. This is Michael from Providence, Rhode Island. Michael, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. Hi, Sasha. I'm the cynical, angry voter. My wife and I just sold our house, moved into an apartment. We pay approximately $2,000 a month to live. There are people in this apartment building on welfare not having to pay for living. As a matter of fact, they got friendly with one, and they drive a Lexus. Makes me cynical and angry. And my last comment would be to DACA. Again, my humble opinion is that if an illegal immigrant comes into this country and has a baby, that baby should not be given an American right. They shouldn't be American citizens.
That's if the baby is born here or brought here as an infant, you believe?
Born here or brought here illegally. I believe that that's the brass ring. If you can get into this country and have a baby here, then they're an American citizen.
When you say born here illegally, you mean born to illegal immigrants?
That's correct.
Okay. Let's hear some of our political leaders talking about this immigration issue. One of them is Lindsey Graham. He's the South Carolina Republican senator. He says he is hopeful the Democrats and Republicans will find common ground in immigration soon. And here he is speaking on CBS's Face the Nation Sunday.
On DACA, there is a deal to be had. The Dreamers can have the life they've dreamed of if the Democrats and Republicans can give. We need the wall, not a complete 2,200-mile wall. We need border security. Marry that up with the DREAM Act. There's a deal to be had on immigration, and I want to do it in January. I don't want to wait till March.
And for a slightly different view, here's Democratic Representative Joe Crowley of New York. Here he is defending DACA recipients as what he calls cultural Americans, and he's speaking also on Face the Nation Sunday.
They are American citizens. In every way. They are cultural Americans. They know no other way of life than being here, and they love this country, and they want to remain here in the United States. And what the president's saying, in order to do that, we have to build a $40 billion wall that you can't drive on, you can't live in, and it's an incredible waste of American resources.
Sunmin Kim of Politico does not sound like a lot of agreement there. What are the prospects for some kind of compromise?
The prospects seem pretty murky at this point. I mean, we've seen Congress fail repeatedly at comprehensive immigration under the Bush administration, under the Obama administration. This is a very complicated and emotional, tricky issue. What does make it a little different this time around is that Congress is facing a deadline to put together some action to extend these protections for these so-called Dreamers. These are undocumented immigrants who came here as children. But even that deadline, whether that deadline is enough for Congress to fully act remains to be seen. Now, there are bipartisan discussions in the Senate that are being led by longtime immigration advocates and people who've worked on this issue, such as Senator Lindsey Graham and Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois and Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona. Those seem to be the most optimistic for producing bipartisan legislation, considering in the Senate you do need 60 votes to pass anything. But I find it difficult to that a legislative package that can pass the Senate with 60 or more than 60 votes can pass the considerably more conservative House. There wasn't too much progress with the Senate bipartisan group over the break. You know, immigration advocates, Democrats, even some Republicans, like Senator Graham, wants to see this resolved in January. The technical deadline is March 5th, but in reality, in practicality, the deadline is much earlier than that.
We have a call from a caller from Kings Mountain, North Carolina. This is Liz. Liz, welcome to On Point, and tell us what you hope for the congressional term ahead.
Hi, Sasha. Thank you for taking my call. My primary goal would be for Trump to be impeached. I believe that he is in large part the source of a lot of the problems that we're having. As far as the tax bill goes, I don't think the corporations should be entitled to the radical tax cuts unless they are held accountable for the economic growth that these tax cuts are supposed to be generating. In other words, if they don't create jobs, if they don't raise wages, they shouldn't be entitled to the tax cuts.
Liz, thank you for that. And Nash Jenkins, Liz raises the giant issue of Donald Trump. Can you give us a sense of what kind of reception he has now coming into Congress this new term? What's the feeling about him on Capitol Hill? How are legislators interacting with him, communicating with him, feeling about him?
I'll answer you by saying, forthright that I don't think impeachment is in the cards. It's just not practical. The Democrats hate him, obviously. But what's been interesting to see on the Republican side is a good deal of acquiescence to his agenda, even from those Republicans who had spoken out against him. The example I'll give is Senator Jeff Flake, whom I profiled for Time back in November. He, of course, announced that he wouldn't seek re-election in a very fiery speech on the Senate floor in October, in which he denounced the violent partisan bluster that is you know, besmirched this era, whatever. And you know, he's you look at his record, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for Jeff Flake. You look at his record, and he votes with Trump. He voted for the tax bill, even though he is a longtime deficit hawk and had expressed serious reservations about the impact of the tax bill on the deficit. Of course, he justified his decision by saying, okay, you know what? I have a deal with Mitch McConnell. We're going to get a vote on a DACA fix in the new year. But I guess the short answer to your question is the Republicans are acting in the interest of their party, and it's his party. The Democrats are doing what they can to stop him, but they can't do much of anything.
Nas Jenkins, stay with us. Also, Sunmin Kim and Susan Davis, stay with us as well for a short break. We are looking ahead to Congress in 2018 and what lawmakers hope to achieve this year. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is On Point.
I'm Stacey Vanek Smith.
I'm Cardiff Garcia.
And we are here with a new show,
The Indicator from Planet Money.
On every show, we take some number in the news and we dive into it to find the big idea behind it.
Get it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. We're talking about what's in store for Congress as the House and Senate reconvene this week and next week. Our guests this hour are Sunmin Kim, who covers Congress for Politico, Nas Jenkins, Washington correspondent for Time magazine, and Susan Davis, congressional correspondent for NPR. And Susan, Sunmin, and Nash, before we go on to specific agenda items, I want us to talk a little bit about the power balance in the Senate and Congress, the power plays going on. Big news yesterday, of course, that Utah Republican Senator Orrin Hatch will be retiring at the end of this term, which opens up the possibility that Mitt Romney could run and possibly take a Senate seat. Here is Orrin Hatch talking about why he's about to leave.
When the president visited Utah last month, he said I was a fighter. I've always been a fighter. I was an amateur boxer in my youth, and I brought that fighting spirit with me to Washington. But every good fighter knows when to hang up the gloves. And for me, that time is soon approaching.
Susan Davis of NPR, Orrin Hatch has spent, what, more than 40 years in the Senate, opening up the possibility for a new face. Tell us if you think it's a shoo-in that Romney will run. If he does, it is a shoo-in that he wins. How do you see this playing out?
Well, Mitt Romney did not make any statement on his future intentions yesterday. He only issued a statement congratulating Orrin Hatch on his career. One of the potentially funny indicators that he is increasingly looking at a run is that it was widely noted that he updated his Twitter bio to change his location from Massachusetts to Utah yesterday.
Right.
This would be his second bid for Congress. If you recall, he ran against Ted Kennedy in 1994 for the Massachusetts Senate seat and lost that seat, later serving as governor for the same state. You know, Mitt Romney is very popular in Utah, and Utah is a state that never really came around on Donald Trump. It's deeply bedded in social conservatism led by the LDS Church that is sort of the fabric of social life there. The Romneys maintain residence there. He was famous in the state not only for his family ties and his ties to the church, but the role he played in saving the Olympics and when they were in, I believe it was Salt Lake City. When he came in and helped improve the Olympic Committee, if he were to get in, I don't think he would be alone in the Republican primary, although I think he would be heavily favored to win it. And if he were to win that primary, it would probably be pretty much a cakewalk in the general election, and he would be very favored to be the next senator. I think one of the reasons why there's so much interest in this is, one, he's a national figure, right? Most Americans know who Mitt Romney is, and that he is had a very complicated relationship with Donald Trump. You know, this is someone who he embraced when he was running for president in 2012. He took his endorsement even as Donald Trump was becoming a prominent figure in the birther conspiracy movement. He has since was a critic of Donald Trump during the 2016 presidential campaign, but then considered being a secretary of state and serving in his administration. There's a very well-known picture of the two of them dining together during the transition. And throughout the course of 2017, he only escalated those criticisms of Donald Trump. He, most notably after the racist violence in Charlottesville, very extensively criticized Trump and has questioned whether he has the character or the leadership skills to serve in the Oval Office.
And so, Trump criticized him back.
Absolutely. I mean, this is not a warm relationship between the two. I think one of the reasons why the president was both privately and publicly encouraging Orrin Hatch to seek another term was in part an effect to elbow Mitt Romney out of this race. He's going to have Orrin Hatch was a much more willing partner in the Senate. Orrin Hatch praised Donald Trump as one of the best of the seven presidents he served under in the Senate. And if Mitt Romney were to serve in the Senate, it's likely that he would take up a role as sort of the Trump critic in the Republican Party, sort of that voice that we've heard this year or last year from senators like Bob Corker of Tennessee and Jeff Flake of Arizona. But both of those senators are retiring.
Sunmin Kim of Politico, this is asking you to speculate. But if Mitt Romney were to run and were to win, what do you think his addition to the Senate would do? I mean, keeping in mind that he was considered a moderate when he was the governor of Massachusetts, how do you see him changing the complexion of the Senate if he were in it?
I think in terms of policy, we've seen even the most adamant Trump critics in the Senate, such as Senators Bob Corker and Senator Jeff Flake, have voted with the president on policy if they think the policy is good. And that shouldn't be a surprise. I mean, they're Republicans. They like tax cuts. They don't support the Affordable Care Act. And I assume Mitt Romney, should he run for Senate and be elected, would kind of be in that same mold. But really, it's his critique and his willingness to be vocal against the president on his rhetoric, on some of his policies, particularly executive actions. That's where I feel Mitt Romney would have the most influence. Clearly, he's going to come in with a much bigger platform than your normal average freshman senator. I'm pretty confident in saying that if he were elected senator, we on Capitol Hill, the reporters would probably flock to him regularly for quotes. And he's aware of that. And I think that will become kind of his central role in the Senate should he be elected. And it would be fascinating to watch.
On Point listeners, we are at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let us know what you think about the palace intrigue of sorts of Orrin Hatch leaving, possibly Mitt Romney running, what you want Congress to get accomplished. Deborah is calling from Jacksonville, Illinois. Deborah, welcome to On Point, and tell us your thoughts and hopes for this congressional term.
Hi, Sasha. Issues interest me and concern me. However, one of importance is the infrastructure issue. My next-door neighbor works construction and works on the bridges and on our highways, and he told me a story that turned my hair gray. He said that he's afraid to even get under the bridges to fix them because they're in such bad disrepair. They're concrete. Concrete is not a temporary structure. It's not a permanent structure. And the weather and elements degrade them. And he said that they're so poorly maintained that he said they're all going to go. It's we're taking our lives in our hands and we're going over these bridges. So that's my comment.
Deborah, thanks for that point. And that's certainly an enormous issue for so many people. We've seen multiple train accidents. We've seen a failure, basically, of the New York City subway system so often. Donald Trump himself has spoken about infrastructure. He claims that would be the simplest legislation to pass this year with bipartisan support. Here is President Trump speaking with reporters after signing the tax bill into law last month.
Infrastructure is by far the easiest. People want it, Republicans and Democrats. We're going to have tremendous Democrat support on infrastructure, as you know. I could have started with infrastructure. I actually wanted to save the easy one for the one down the road. So we'll be having that done pretty quickly.
Nash Jenkins of Time Magazine, even if many people can agree that our roads and bridges need a lot of work, that's a gigantically expensive project ahead. Do you think it's as easy as Trump says it will be? What do you think the prospects are for infrastructure spending and passing in a significant manner?
Listen, I'll start by saying that infrastructure reform is absolutely vital. Before I moved to D.C., I spent 2.5 years in Hong Kong and China. And you look at the roads, you look at the rail, you look at the airports there, and you understand why they're booming economically. It is the circulatory system of a vibrant industrial economy, and ours is quite literally crumbling. I mean, we saw that most recently with the Amtrak derailing in the Pacific Northwest a couple of weeks ago. All you have to do is drive on our highways or take the subway in New York City, as you said. However, I do think that once again, Congress is going to get in the way of itself. And by Congress, I mean Republicans in Congress. I was chatting yesterday with a senior Democratic aide who was griping about the fact that there have been numerous chats in the White House about an infrastructure bill, and Democrats haven't been invited to them. And again, that's just strange to me because they need Democratic support. It's an easy opportunity for both sides to say, "Hey, look at us. We work together." It's like the good old days. And yet that's not happening. And I wish I was a psychologist so I could give you better insight into what's going on in their minds because it doesn't really make sense to me. But the short answer to your question is, given the reluctance to embrace bipartisan work and the more general ineffectiveness of this Congress, I would say it is a bit quixotic to anticipate a sweeping infrastructure bill in the next 6 months or even year, especially during a midterm year when – you know, folks are preoccupied with holding on to power and, you know, winning elections rather than getting legislation done.
Let's go to another caller. This is Tom calling from Detroit in Michigan, of course. Tom, welcome to On Point, and tell us your thoughts and hopes for this congressional term.
Well, hi, Sasha. You know, I got to go back to the lady that called in. I'd like to see Trump impeached, and I'd even like to see it go further. I would hope that Mueller brings him up on collusion charges and he is sent to prison. Now, in terms of Mitch McConnell, he has the unmitigated gall to sit there and talking about he wants bipartisanship, you know, cooperation between Democrats and Republicans. When President Obama was elected and sworn in, he said, and I'm pretty sure I got this quote right, "It is my objective to make sure that President Obama is a one-term president." And they said no to this man in terms of President Obama, said no literally on everything that he wanted to get accomplished. We're sitting here talking about infrastructure right now. President Obama came out with the American Jobs Act bill, which would have taken care of the infrastructure. So what'd you do? You kick the can down the road, and we're here talking about it again. But in terms of, you know, do I expect them to get anything done? Absolutely not. Because Republicans, they are going to stick to their party line and their ideology and their, you know, petty politics. And we, the people, be damned, we are the ones that are going to end up suffering because of, you know, their commitment to party and not to people.
Tom, your comments bring to mind another issue in which Republicans were clearly determined to dismantle an Obama-era legacy, and that, of course, is Obamacare. Here is a piece of sound of Lindsey Graham, the South Carolina Republican senator, saying that he does not see a bipartisan path forward to improving the nation's health care system. And he was speaking on CBS's Face the Nation.
Health care, there's a debate between federalism and socialism. I don't know of one Republican who wants to repair Obamacare. I don't know one Democrat who wants to replace it. So we're not going to come together on health care.
Susan Davis of NPR, on the other hand, now that that tax penalty for people who don't have individual health insurance has been eliminated, many people say that essentially is the end of Obamacare. So is there much left for Republicans to dismantle? How much do you see health care or the Affordable Care Act being a priority this term?
Well, what was really interesting is the question of how much interest Donald Trump has in trying again. And the White House and the president himself have seemed to indicate that they're ready to move on. At the signing ceremony for the tax bill, the president said with the zeroing out of the individual mandate, the tax penalty, and the Affordable Care Act that incentivizes people to buy insurance, that he kind of declared mission accomplished, said that they've effectively repealed the law. That's not true. That's not how it works. But if the president himself is ready to move on from the health care fight, it's hard to see how much oxygen it will get within Republicans on Capitol Hill. And on top of that, Mitch McConnell has also indicated that he's ready to move on, that he doesn't see much incentive to reviving the Affordable Care Act fights in 2018, because despite the enthusiasm of Lindsey Graham and other Republicans, there still is not a solution that it is clear that they have the votes to pass on Republican votes alone. And they now also have a more narrow majority. They are now a 51-49 Senate, not a 52-48 Senate, with the swearing in today of Doug Jones, the senator from Alabama. So it just doesn't seem like it is politically realistic that they're going to be able to do it again, even if rhetorically a lot of Republicans say they want to keep trying.
I wonder, Sunmin Kim of Politico, if you could give us a closing thought on a big picture issue raised by one of our listeners on Twitter. This is by a listener named Maureen Fox, and she writes, "Perhaps Speaker Ryan should address minimum wage and a living wage when he talks of welfare reform. Most people aren't on welfare as a lifestyle choice. Americans need job training, or many will need long-term financial help due to being trapped in low-wage jobs." Is anything like that on the agenda, job training, a way to help people get out of poverty beyond just giving them a welfare check?
There's been discussion about these training programs, but kind of the centerpiece of the listener's message talking about raising the minimum wage, that is not on the horizon for this Republican Congress in any way. So I think this is really going to come down to the midterms. Democrats and Republicans are going to present their contrasting visions of what they want for this country. Clearly, raising the minimum wage is something that has been championed by Democrats for a long time. It is one part of many of their agenda that they're selling to voters this fall. So I think you're going to really see this play out more politically. I mean, this is not a legislative fight that we expect to see in Congress anytime soon.
And Nash Jenkins of Time Magazine, a closing thought from you too, if you would, based on another comment from another listener on Twitter. This is someone who identifies himself as Finance Phil, and his comment is, "Joe Blow doesn't care about the overall economy. He cares about his paycheck, his health care costs, and his Social Security." Do you think that is true? Really, does the usual individual taxpayer's concern come down to those small scale personal things beyond overall economy?
Yeah, I think old Finance Phil has a good point. And I don't want to speak for every American voter, because I think that's where many people in the media find themselves in trouble. But I think. You know, you look at the issues that have dominated, say, the Democratic agenda, especially during the 2016 election, many of which were social issues, transgender rights, et cetera, all of which are important issues. But the way I see it, to be able to concern oneself with those issues is something of a luxury. It's sort of post-material politics, if you will. The average voter in, Leland, North Carolina, at the end of the day, he doesn't care about what is right and what is wrong in terms of cultural values, and he doesn't really care about the deficit. He wants to know that he can buy dinner for his family and that he can afford his car payment and that he's not going to have to take another mortgage out in his house. So I think it's a fair point.
Nash Jenkins, Washington correspondent who covers Congress for Time Magazine, thank you for that closing thought. Susan Davis, congressional correspondent for NPR, and Sungmin Kim, who covers Congress for Politico, good to have both of you back on the show. Thanks to all three of you for your time today.
Hey, thank you.
I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is On Point.